In December 2013, a tweet blew up the internet. A woman who was on her way to Cape Town from London, just before boarding her flight, typed this.
Going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white.
She sent the tweet, boarded the flight, then spent the next 11 hours in the air without any internet. Sleeping and doing all that you do to pass time in a cold cabin surrounded by people you don't know. But when she landed in Cape Town and turned her phone back on, she found herself staring at an explosion of notifications. Thousands of people had found her tweet offensive. They obsessively followed her flight path, they shamed her, and they wanted her fired from her job. If you want to read more, there are links in the show notes. In the 11 hours the woman had spent up in the air, disconnected from the World Wide Web, her world on the ground had changed completely. Now, imagine going farther up, as a space traveler, where our travel times won't be just a few hours. It would be days, months, or even years. Would you be willing to travel without the internet for that long? Or would you only buy a ticket to Mars if you knew you could tweet, do Zoom meetings, stream Netflix shows, and watch YouTube videos on conspiracy theories? Basically, be able to use the internet in outer space just the way you do here on Earth. In the last episode, we explored if we could travel to space from India. Do check that out first if you haven't already. In this bonus episode, we'll explore whether, as a space traveler, you will get access to the internet wherever you go in our solar system. This is a bonus episode of Imagined Tomorrow, a podcast that explores hypothetical futures for India through the lens of science and technology. I'm your host, Shreya Dasgupta. In this episode, you'll hear from Dr. Abhijit Borkar. He's an astrophysicist who studies black holes. He currently works at the Astronomical Institute of the Czech Academy of Sciences in Prague.
Similar to how we have been doing air travel for such a long time without any way of communicating until very recently, my thought was also that, okay, for the first few years, people would probably go without any ability to communicate directly. I mean, they will be communicating with the ground staff, but not directly through your Twitter feed or something.
On flights, pilots can communicate with the air traffic control staff on ground. But as passengers, we are asked to keep our phones on the flight mode. We can download videos and watch them on board, of course, but we haven't really had direct web access. You know, where if we want to find out the plot of Squid Game, we go on Google from our phones and read it quickly. Only recently have certain airlines started offering Wi-Fi and data packages to passengers. Similarly, astronauts on the International Space Station for many years did not have personal web access. Space is their workplace, so they are both the pilots and passengers. They've always been able to communicate with the ground mission staff through a network of satellites and ground antennas, basically to receive commands and send data and so on. That is essential. But they couldn't just go online and fall down a rabbit hole of articles or YouTube videos. If they wanted to post something on Facebook from space, they would have to type the post in an official email, send it to the ground support staff, who would then post it to the astronauts' Facebook account. It was only in 2010 that the International Space Station's communication system was upgraded, so the astronauts could directly access the internet for personal use. NASA said giving the astronauts direct access to the web could enhance their quality of life during their otherwise really long isolating missions. I think this would also apply to non-professional space travelers who are, say, going to Mars for 2 years. So let's start with how the internet works in the International Space Station, which is some 408 kilometers above Earth. What happens when you click on a website link in the spacecraft?
Essentially, what you have is you have a receiving antenna on the spacecraft. So whether that's International Space Station or the Blue Origin flight.
Think of it as a Tata Sky Dish antenna that you place on your building roof.
And the communication happens through radio waves. And the radio waves have to travel to geosynchronous orbit. So that is about 35,000 kilometers. So there are satellites located there.
So when you click a website link, the request travels from the antenna on the spacecraft to one of these satellites at 35,000 kilometers above Earth. The satellite then sends the signal down to a receiver on ground below. So the radio signal first goes up, then down. On land, the signal gets processed in a data center before the response to your click is returned along the same path back to the spacecraft, which is about 70,000 kilometers each way. And since 2010, astronauts on the ISS have used this system for their personal web access, for browsing through memes, streaming live sports sometimes. They even have weekly movie nights, which for some reason involves a lot of space movies. And of course they tweet a lot, sometimes cribbing about the slow internet speed on the ISS. Some of you might remember NASA astronaut Scott Kelly's famous tweet from 2015 that he sent from the spacecraft. He said, and I quote, "We have a slow internet connection, worse than what dial-up was like."
The speeds are very slow. So it's about 10 to 100 times slower than your home internet before the fiber optics revolution. So it's not a very strong connection. For the International Space Station, the additional complexity is that they don't have their own phones. And of course, they have their tablets and computers there, but they are not independent. They actually are synced to the computers on the ground station and they are mirrored. So when the astronaut actually moves a cursor or types a key, it actually sends the signal to the ground computer and everything happens at the ground computer. So there is the additional delay and that sort of adds more to the latency as well as the slow speeds. But this was, of course, done for the security reasons so that if there is some hacking or compromise of the computers, only the ground computer gets hacked and not the computer on board so that they are safe from any kind of malpractices or dangers from hacking or similar things.
As I had mentioned, for the astronauts, the ISS is their workplace. And so they have to share the bandwidth they get to send their work stuff, which is a huge volume of data from their hundreds of experiments on board. All of this adds to the slowness of the internet. But as we have more and more people going to space, farther and farther away, how do we talk to those spacecrafts and the people who might go on these spacecrafts in the future?
So currently, we communicate to all the spacecrafts that we have sent via radio communication so far. So even in the New Horizon and Pioneers and Voyager spacecraft that we have sent to almost interplanetary distances.
Voyager 1, that NASA launched from Earth in 1977, is currently more than 23 billion kilometers away. Imagine communicating with something that's so far away. Yet we've been doing it. And since the beginning of space exploration, we've been using radio waves. Because radio waves are like good old reliable workhorses.
The downside is that the radio waves get weaker very quickly.
Sort of like sound waves. If you put this podcast on your speaker and move away, the farther you go, the harder it will become for you to understand my words. Similarly, the farther you go from the source, the weaker radio signals get, mathematically by the square of the distance from the starting point. That means that if you are twice as far away, the signal is only 1/4 as strong. Sometimes the rovers on Mars talk to Earth directly at 500 bits per second. At that rate, it can take you more than 3 days to download this episode.
By the time you reach Jupiter or further distances, your signals are so weak that you have to build really large antennas to catch those signals and you have to keep sending signals for 2 days or 3 days to get few megabytes of data.
ISRO, for example, has built a 32-meter wide antenna close to Bangalore. This is India's largest antenna and it was used for the Moon mission and then the Mars mission. Similarly, NASA has some antennas that are 70 meters wide. These track spacecrafts like the Voyager. So the larger the antenna, the greater the amount of information it can detect and send. But there's only so much information you can cram into radio waves. The higher the frequency of the radio wave, or the closer the waves are together, the more information you can encode in them. But keep increasing the frequency and you start moving away from radio waves and towards the infrared and visible light part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Which is why, to make space communication faster, people have been experimenting with sending data through light, or optical communication.
This is similar to how the fiber optic internet connection works for us. So fiber optic is essentially you have fiberglass through which laser pulses are sent at very high speeds. And because they are sent at such high speeds, you can actually send a lot of data in very short time. So you have a laser emitting laser gun essentially on Earth and you shoot specific laser pulses every few microseconds or every nanoseconds. And that essentially goes as zeros and ones reaching to the receiver of the satellite. So this is how you communicate. So you don't need actual physical cable to communicate via laser. You can just send the laser signals.
The good thing about lasers is that they can not just carry more data and travel faster, but they can also go really far without quickly becoming weak, like radio waves. So you can communicate with spacecrafts and people who are farther away more precisely. So you might ask then, why have we been stuck with radio waves? Well, because they are cheaper to use and relatively simpler.
A radio wave communication, it has a direction, but it is much spread out. So you don't need to be very specific about which direction you are sending in. You just have to be in the rough direction to the satellites that you are sending the signal to. While for laser communication, you have to be very precise when sending the laser that you need to be sending it directly to the receiver of the spacecraft. So the disadvantage comes when you have both the spacecraft is moving as well as the Earth is rotating. Then you have to be really careful about how you're sending your signals.
Also, radio waves are longer, so they can cut through clouds and other atmospheric disturbances more easily than light, which has shorter waves.
You don't send the signals through wires, but you are sending directly through the atmosphere. And the atmosphere has a distorting effect to the laser beam. So that might actually muddle the communication and sort of distort the signal so that you might lose either some bits or you might lose or distort the data.
In 2013, to demo optical communication, NASA beamed up a photo of Mona Lisa to a spacecraft orbiting the moon. And the atmosphere did make the image wonky. The digital Mona Lisa had thousands of missing pixels, almost as if a colony of rats had chewed through the image on its way up. But NASA scientists have been continuing to fine-tune the system.
Yes, that is definitely being trialed by NASA and a couple of private companies in the US, where they are trying to see whether they can communicate directly with ISS through laser-based communication. And there have been a couple of trials which have been very positive. So it might be that in the next 1 or 2 years, they will send receivers to the ISS, which will be one of the first prototypes of these laser-based communications.
So in the future, Dr. Borker says we will probably talk with spacecrafts and people in space using a combination of radio waves and lasers.
And of course, there are also a few plans of building satellites around the moon and around Mars to provide some 4G or 5G internet connection around those places.
A whole bunch of things are happening that will sort of map the future of internet in space. NASA, for example, has partnered with Nokia to set up a 4G cellular network on the moon by the end of 2022. Then there's Elon Musk's company and their Starlink project. Basically, they are creating this mega constellation of thousands of satellites around Earth, which they say will provide high-speed internet to the remotest parts of our planet. Companies like Amazon also have similar plans. And what these companies are doing around Earth, they plan to build around other planets too. In the last episode, we heard about Musk's plans of settling on Mars, with the first humans going there by 2024. And these plans include having a constellation like Starlink around Mars. So, a Starlink around Earth, a Starlink around Mars, and a swarm of satellites in between talking to each other, creating an interplanetary internet. It's another thing that being at the mercy of a few companies for internet and data sounds iffy at best. But does this mean that we can expect to stream Netflix shows or YouTube videos when we are traveling to Mars and staying there? Dr. Borker thinks streaming all the time might be hard.
It might be a combination of providing internet connection for essential communication and then providing local hardware, local data on the spacecraft itself. For example, even like if you want to watch movies, you will not be streaming directly from Netflix via the internet that is coming from Earth. But what you would have is, let's say, 1 terabyte of data space on the spacecraft that has all the Netflix downloaded there. And you would just carry that with you, which will be still much cheaper and much more affordable than having to download all that data directly from Earthways.
Oh, and one more thing. Real-time video chatting or live streaming from your Instagram or YouTube channel will become harder the farther you go from Earth. Because according to Einstein's theory of relativity, nothing moves faster than light. On Earth, that's great. Light moves at 300,000 kilometers per second. That's 7.5 times around the planet at the equator in a second. But Mars at its closest to Earth is 54.6 million kilometers away. So a light shining from Mars will take 3 minutes to reach Earth. When Earth and Mars are their farthest apart, light will take 22 minutes to travel between the planets.
So it will be easier if you're on Earth's orbit or on lunar orbit, or if you're on the moon, because the time delay between Earth and the moon is much smaller. It's only a few seconds. So it will be almost a live stream, but the time delay between Earth and Mars is about 15 minutes. So even if you try to do a live stream, it will be still 15 minutes delayed. So it will not be a live communication per se. So even if currently we are talking to each other and it's instantaneous, even though we are two continents apart, but that will not be the case when you are communicating with someone on Mars. That person will have to wait 15 minutes to get your email or your call and then have to respond. And then you have to wait 15 minutes to receive their response and so on and so forth. If you go further out towards Venus and Mercury, then the delay is so much that essentially it will be back to how it was during the telegram era. I think once we become interplanetary, instantaneous communication will be a thing of the past.
This was the last episode of this pilot season of Imagine Tomorrow. Thank you for listening to everything we put out there. We started this podcast because we feel strongly about who gets to think about and shape our future. Futures that a country like India might see. There are of course plenty of folks talking about what the future will be like for the Western world. But we have our own unique cultural and economic complexities. And there aren't enough people talking about how futures might play out here. Imagine Tomorrow is our way of exploring that in an audio medium. The episodes for season 1 trickled in slowly, but we are doing this independently, so the learning curve was steep. Still, thank you for being such generous, forgiving listeners. We are taking a break now, but we will be back with a brand new season with lots of new and exciting futures that we are working on. We promise you great content to binge on. If you'd like to be a part of deciding what futures we explore, or you want to support the show in other ways, please follow our Twitter handle. The links will be there in the show notes. With that, thank you and goodbye.